So here we are after a change of script. Red Bull did not win, as everyone predicted and everyone thought, including myself, and I'm sure everybody, that Max would win in Australia. Instead, smooth operator, Carlos Sainz, thrilled everybody. I can't think of anyone that's not absolutely thrilled that Carlos won in the manner that he won. It was a great thing. I mean, honestly, I'm increasingly impressed with this guy. And we'll talk about him a lot more because there were a lot more things. I think the fact that Mercedes bombed, the Alonso story. So there's a lot to talk about. So moving on, Jad, give us the aftermath from your perspective of the Australian Grand Prix, round three of the 2024 Formula One World Championship.
Well, the facts are that Red Bull and Max Verstappen now are not really comfortably ahead in the championship anymore. I think just 4 points ahead of Ferrari in the constructors. Max, I think he has a 4 points buffer as well. And yeah, it shows us that maybe it's not going to be a runaway season for Max this time. For the first time in 2 years, he had the problem with the reliability. And yeah, it shows you that once you think or believe how much an F1 season could be predictable, you turn out to be so wrong. Ferrari seemed to have a decent car. They seem to be able to challenge properly. Mercedes are lost. They don't know what to do with that car. McLaren, they show up sometimes and sometimes they don't. Other than that, going down the grid, there's lots of interesting facts. You know, the fact about Williams and their spare chassis, which we'll talk about. RB seemed to be in a decent position. Alpine, pathetic. Sauber, they can't even do a proper pit stop. So lots of interesting stuff which came up from the Australian Grand Prix. And for once this season, where we were able to focus more on the racing than on the off-track shenanigans or what have you.
Yeah, it was refreshing not to have the Horner show and all that. Although that is still not solved. It's under the carpet. Unfortunately, it did not dominate headlines as much as Carlos Sainz winning. And, you know, you got to remember, 2 weeks before that, he had an operation. And I think there's some photos during the rounds where he lifted up his race suit and you can see a big blast over his tummy where the appendix was, you know. So honestly, it was probably one of the bravest performances I've seen in the modern era of a racing driver. And he was stellar. I mean, he really looked like Max up there at the front. He was controlling everything. And while I was reporting, I was just watching it. I thought, okay, when is Leclerc going to drop the hammer? And about 4 or 5 laps to go, if I'm not mistaken, Leclerc went and set the fastest lap. Boom. And the lead was 5.5 and it went to like 4.8. I said, okay, here we go. But then immediately the lap later, it was 5.1, you know. So basically, Sainz was saying, yeah, you can push, but I can push back. And that's how it kind of remained. I think it was an absolutely fantastically well-controlled race by then. Disappointing for Leclerc. You know, increasingly, I'm starting to think maybe Ferrari keeping the wrong Charlie. I wrote a piece about that myself. But I really do think that Carlos Sainz is a big asset to any team. But there isn't many teams that he would want to go to. He's ready to start winning races, as you can see, with a constant winning car. So that's not going to be Mercedes. That's not going to be Audi. It's going to be Red Bull. So if Red Bull got the balls and they really want a super team, I would actually sign Max and Carlos Sainz. Because, you know, if you think about it, Carlos at Red Bull gives them like all bases covered. You know what I mean? Because if Max decides to go to Mercedes, which would be wacky, then there's Carlos, you know. But if Max decides to stay, then Carlos is there. I think you're going to have a super team. Because anybody who's going to go up against Max and really give him a go, it's going to be dirty. It's going to be horrid. It's going to be Rosberg, Hamilton, because that's how racing drivers are. But if anyone can give Max a go at the moment, I'm looking at Carlos as being the main guy. I don't know about you.
Exactly. I totally agree. And I also agree that I think now maybe John Elkann and Fred Vasseur are just scratching their heads. Like, did we take the right decision for 2025? Most probably, yeah, having Lewis is the right decision. But is it going to be Leclerc? Because Leclerc, we've seen that he has so many highs and so many lows. But Carlos, once he integrated himself into Ferrari, he became very consistent. Don't forget, he's the only winner in the past 2 seasons other than Red Bull. And that's no mean feat. You know what I mean? And he's on a mission. He's on a mission. And in another piece, which I wrote as well, the headline was, I drive for myself and I will continue to. That's a very, very strong message from Carlos to Ferrari. And it's going to make things interesting later in the season. If he's asked to move over to Leclerc, is he going to do it?
Look, he's a gentleman. You know, I think he knows he's playing his hand really, really well. I think having his dad's advice, I think that's invaluable. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's racing still at the highest level and he's 62. So I think Carlos has proved a lot of people at Maranello, maybe you're wrong, guys. Maybe this is the wrong Charlie. But anyway, moving on. Red Bull, what actually happened there? It was actually a dreadful weekend. And of course, you know, when Sergio should have jumped up to the plate, you know, the objective of having such a dominant team is when the number one car breaks down, the number two car takes over. But Sergio was nowhere and he broke his underfloor or whatever. What happened this weekend at Red Bull?
Yeah, exactly. It was an off weekend for Red Bull. It's kind of similar to what happened at Singapore, at the Singapore Grand Prix last year, but maybe it wasn't that disastrous. Leaving performance-wise, leaving the DNF aside, we'll talk about that later. But in terms of the car, it wasn't really in the sweet spot, and the car, they couldn't get on top of the graining that they were having. Ferrari did a better job with that. Now for Checo, yeah, in the race he was mediocre, but then after the race, Christian Horner revealed that they had a problem with the floor, so the car wasn't generating downforce properly. So that slowed him down. He didn't, in qualifying, still Checo has a problem. He cannot compete with the top cars in the other teams. He cannot compete with the top Ferraris and everything. And of course, his grid penalty didn't help. You know, he was dropped down to sixth. And that just...
But his own fault, you know. I think his own fault. I mean, I don't know what the communication is. So, end of the day, the driver's out there and he was impeding, you know. What are you doing impeding? The guy's been in the sport so, so long. Surely, you know, you don't make those kind of mistakes. I don't see Max making those kind of mistakes. That's the whole thing, you know.
Look, I think it takes two to tango. I think it's a mistake from the engineer as well as him, because these things happen. It happened to top drivers before that, yeah, the engineer tells them quite late that this is the problem and they don't have time to move over. But yeah.
Why always Sergio? That's my thing. Yeah, I get it. But, you know, it's like karma. It's like luck. Everyone gets the same amount. You know what I'm saying? But end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These things happen. But this is the case for Red Bull. Now for Max and with his brake failure. Yeah, that was spectacular. And no one saw that coming, actually. I was surprised when I saw Sainz overtake him by lap two. And I said, where did that come from? And then I realized, yeah, Max didn't build up the gap. We were used to him building up the gap in the first lap or so, getting out of the DRS, but he couldn't. And then the brakes exploded. So, and we're talking today to our technical expert, Mark Kay, and yeah, he said that could have been down to hot spotting, which is basically the brakes were too hot for too long while Max was waiting on pole for the race to start, and he's put this on the brake pedal. And so basically it cooked the whole system and the brakes just locked. And when he went back to the pit, we could see this explosion and this carbon fiber dust coming out of the wheel. And yeah, basically that's the braking lines exploded. So this is the most viable explanation for now. Red Bull did not reveal what happened, but yeah, this is what we have. And knowing Mark and we know his experience, I think he's spot on with his analysis.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with Mark. He is a guru, but I'm going to throw this one at you. I think they trialed a magic brake, gizmo, something that they needed to turn one to get there first and stop the car. Pretty much like I think teams have run these kind of things over the years. I have no proof. It's just my gut feel. Let's look at it like a handbrake. It's a one-use handbrake for turn one. You know what I mean? So they used it once, boom, he pulled it up, and then it jammed. I'm going to go that route because... It's a bulletproof car, this, you know, Max does not make mistakes like keeping his foot on the brake. As much as it's plausible, absolutely, and that's probably the right reason, I'm going to have to throw in with my very limited technical observations that looked like a handbrake failure. And it's a handbrake in the simplest of manners. It's just, end of the day, all you need, and this is what I would do if I was a team boss, say, listen, we need to get into turn one first. Let's make this car stop. But we can stick this magic brake and this thing, we can use it once, and boom, boom. And they used it, and that's my theory, and I'm happy to be shot down. But I don't trust Formula One teams, and when they don't give you a reason for why the thing broke, then you know it's, well, they don't want to be caught lying. You know what I'm saying? So that's my theory. But again, I can't prove anything. I'm just going on conspiracy.
Yeah, well, the F1 teams have done some outlandish stuff in the past. So, but yeah, for this time, I'm sticking with Mark's theory. So, yeah, that's
okay. No, that's cool. I get that, and I'm probably going to be proven wrong. And of course, it's always good to tap into Mark because of his experience and stuff. For me, the next big story, of course, although it wasn't in the podium area, was the Alonso penalty for brake testing George Russell. What's your take on that?
Well, for me, it reminds you of the, you know, the black arts of racing, which Fernando and Michael Schumacher before mastered, and where they were fighting each other. It reminds you of these days. Now, by the letter of the rule, which the FIA considered, yeah, he did something wrong because he was speeding up and slowing down and he was doing stuff different than usual. Now, the word brake testing here, I don't think it was much accurate in describing situation, because although he braked and the stewards noted that, they said the braking wasn't too significant, but Alonso was doing so many acrobatics with the throttle and the gear shifts. And yeah, he caught Russell by surprise. Now, Russell was decent enough to say, yeah, I was surprised. I shouldn't have been surprised. I should have been careful. But I think the overwhelming consensus is that, yeah, Alonso was a bit, I'm not going to say dirty, he was a bit naughty in what he did. And yeah, hence the penalty. So yeah, I don't think you can defend it. Although Russell somehow shoulders a bit of blame and he graciously said that. He said, yeah, it's my mistake. I should have been careful. I should have expected him maybe to slow down or something like that.
Look, George Russell's been now in a big team for 2 years. I was very, very impressed with him. And I still am. I think he's a fantastic ambassador for the team. I think he's fast. I just have one problem. Russell is accident prone. You know, he is accident. I don't care what anyone says. He's not good in close combat. There's always flying bits when him and Lewis are together. And they're teammates. I mean, there have been some really hairy moments between them. And, you know, it's not the first time he's ran the guy in the back. You know what I mean? Because he's too close, too fast, and miscalculated. You know, Valtteri Bottas, for instance. And then at that time, he went to the cockpit and he nearly hit Valtteri. And it was like, man, dude, you know, he was doing what he was doing. He wasn't brake testing. You got to get around him. No matter what if the car blew up at that point? You don't know. So you've got to be more astute. And I just feel last lap of the race, Mercedes have had a putrid weekend. They're just going nowhere. The car is a handful. That he's already that far up is a miracle. He's done his job. Yes, you're a racing driver, go for the gap. Yeah, but with one lap to go, it's Fernando Alonso. Your car is pretty shit, let's be honest. You're going to go for a move like that? I don't know. I question him. I question his abilities to race in close quarters and to think it through. You know, it's not a first lap. It's not a last lap. This is a 24-race season. Now he's got a broken Mercedes. And yeah, I don't think he thought that one through, you know. And again, you can't fault it because if you see the gap, you're not a racing driver if you don't go for it. But was there a gap, you know, especially at that stage of the race? I don't know. Yes, Alonso was perhaps naughty. I didn't see it that way when it happened, by the way. You know, the guy was fiddling with it. When I say brake testing, you know, I mean it in the greater context of thing. You know, brake testing, I mean, hit the brake. Brake test is taking the foot off the gas. You know, we're Formula One car. You just take a foot off the gas a little bit and you lose a lot of top end and suddenly the guy behind you is on you. You know what I mean? So it's not necessarily, oh, he hit the brake at the wrong time. No, brake testing is a lot more sly when you go to that level. You know, it's like, okay, you just, instead of going full throttle 1 second, you go half throttle 1 second. You know what I mean? That's a brake test because you're doing it knowing. You say, the guy's coming. I'm going to back him up and then I'm going to squirt. It's part of racing. So, that he got a penalty for it. I'm on his camp. You know, you got a penalty for hard racing and for a guy who behind is obliged to make sure he can get past without pranging. And George doesn't do that to him.
Yeah, look, I have to agree with what you said about George Russell. Honestly, now with Lewis leaving the team, I think Mercedes, they have a lot of thinking to do. Because they've said when Lewis decided to go to Ferrari that, yeah, we have a leader in George Russell. I don't think this guy's ready to lead Mercedes, especially in the bad situation they are in. Which takes us to the next thing. That W15, man, was vicious. It was vicious in Melbourne. Lewis could not take turn one correctly. All his slides, all, turn one, he couldn't control the car there. And when you're talking Lewis Hamilton not managing to control a car, that's not Lewis. That's not Lewis's fault. That's the car's fault. We know that. And I don't think they're any closer to understanding the car or improving the car. They went with this big change in design, and either they messed that up again, or they don't understand what they did. And in both cases, you know, both reasons are worse. You don't know what's worse to say. We messed it up again for the third year in a row, or we don't understand the car. You're Mercedes. You're an eight-time constructor championship champion. So it's, yeah, it's not looking good for Mercedes. It's not looking good. And I think Lewis can't wait to get over to Maranello and start his new life with Ferrari.
And again, he's timed it perfectly. You know, he left McLaren when it's, and then it sank. He went to Mercedes against everybody's advice, actually, and then did what he did. And now he's ditched, surprised everyone by ditching Mercedes and going to Ferrari at exactly the right time. And you absolutely hit the nail on the head as far as I'm concerned, man. I'm an observer of these teams when they're in trouble. And you could just see, okay, FP1, they looked decent, okay, in Melbourne. It was never a wrap. They were there, thereabout. They looked like P3 pecking order. Then they got smart. Yeah, oh, God, we're in the street. I'm understanding this car now. Let's go. And you can just see Lewis, let's go aggressive. Let's go. And they went aggressive. And the car went 1.5 seconds slower. Man, that is like, I don't know, that's such a misunderstanding. It's like, you know, handing a guy coffee with two sugars, but you, instead of putting sugar, you put salt. You know what I mean? It's horrible. And then they came back, but they were always chasing. And I'm just feeling that Russell is having to drive extremely hard for one lap, and that's why he gets the better out of the car, because that's how Russell is, and he's a young guy, so he can give that one immense lap that Lewis just has forgotten about those laps. He used to give them many, and he can't be asked, because end of the day, you're a seven-time world champion, 103 pole positions. You know, if you give him a car that no one can put anywhere, he's not going to put it anywhere. And I think, as you say, I think that the fact that he's going to Ferrari is something that Mercedes have to consider and see if indeed Russell is the leader they have. They really need a guy to actually stand and deliver and take the team by the scruff of the neck. And they've got to look internally, you know, James Allison, all those guys. I mean, you've got a lot of clever guys at Mercedes, very clever, genius. And this is what they conjure, and they don't understand it. It's scary, mate. It's very scary.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. They have some head scratching to do. They need to find a driver that would help them get out of this pit.
On the other hand, their customer is McLaren.
Yeah, well, McLaren, definitely they started this year better than last year. This is a given. But we would have expected them to have a bigger performance jump over the winter, which they didn't achieve. And you can feel it. You can feel it with Lando Norris talking. You can see the body language. Yeah, they didn't make the jump that they wanted to make. But it seems that their car is decent in some places. And I think those high-speed corners in Melbourne, they helped them. And Lando was bullish after the race. He said, P2, I should have gotten P2. But Ferrari outsmarted them with a strategy when Leclerc, he undercut Norris. And that's why they lost P2. But Lando was definitely on to get P2, but Ferrari outsmarted them. Yeah, I feel that we're going to see McLaren going up and down, and it's going to be track related. But yeah, we have to see, because we don't know how the developments are going to come, the upgrades through the season, if they can improve the car much more.
For sure, McLaren started far better than last year. There's no doubt about it. But I think they're a bit disappointed that they're not closer to Red Bull. I think that's what, like you said, the body language. That's why myself, as a McLaren fan, I'm not getting too excited, because it's still a gap. And I'd say Ferrari have wedged themselves. Would it be fair to say that last year, I mean, just correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, they finished the season as the number two team. Since they got their mid-season upgrade from Austria onwards, yeah, that car was arguably the second fastest car on the grid. But no, this year Ferrari have taken over, and Ferrari they also sorted out their race space problems with the tire deg. So that's working for them. And you can see it also well, because Haas are even better on that thing. And Haas, they got all the suspension components from Ferrari. So
yeah, Double point score for them, wasn't it?
So this is the situation. Yeah, McLaren still have lots of work to do, but I think they'll be fighting Mercedes on occasion. Depends, like we said, track oriented on when Mercedes don't lose their way with the setup like they did this time. And yeah, then Aston Martin would come backing them up. I think, yeah, this is the pecking order, and this is confirmed. Three races, and we said Red Bull are the fastest, Ferrari are second, Mercedes and McLaren, they're fighting each other for third, and then Aston Martin is the bottom of the top five.
Listen, special mention to Tsunoda. I know we give him a hard time, and I'm still on the fence with him, but he had a solid weekend, and he really made Daniel look bad at home. You know what I mean? Home soil, Daniel Ricciardo expected, okay, this guy's going to pull it. But he was bad in qualifying, he was bad in the race, and yet Tsunoda was in there. I mean, you know, kudos to him.
In terms of Daniel Ricciardo, Daniel Ricciardo's making Daniel Ricciardo look bad. There's something wrong with that guy. There's a Daniel Ricciardo which we're used to, and he's not there anymore. Unless he comes back, end of the story. And I think he's under extreme pressure now. And I think Red Bull realized their mistake with bringing him back in. Especially when you have someone like Liam Lawson waiting in the behind the scenes. So, yeah, that's a big mistake. But, yeah, Tsunoda has to be given credit. He delivered a solid weekend. He wasn't erratic. Look, he's getting more mature. But, yeah, like you said, you're on the fence. I'm going to go and say, no, I don't think that guy belongs in a Red Bull. I think this is the top of it. This is the best he could achieve.
Oh, yeah, there's no denying. I mean, you know, even him and Daniel, they're not ready for everybody. I mean, if they get put next to Max, Max is going to just absolutely mince them. I mean, Perez is on another level to Tsunoda, and Daniel can't even beat Tsunoda. You know, that's the reality. I mean, Daniel has this thing that he's going to be a Red Bull driver again. Honestly, if he does, then you've got to question Christian Horner. You got it, because apparently he is the guy. And I haven't watched Drive to Survive, but you told me that Horner was the catalyst for getting Daniel Ricciardo back at the expense of Lawson. So the buck's got to stop with him. And, you know, Christian's got to sort his act out together, because honestly, back in, Daniel was the wrong horse. And especially with all these new young guys, you know, they come in and they immediately deliver, which Liam did. It wasn't like Liam, he went. And you know what? They fired Nick De Vries. For what? Is Daniel better than Nick? I don't think he is. I don't think Nick would probably improve. Daniel's never going to be the Daniel at Red Bull that won races. Never. I don't see that. Unless this guy gets a lobotomy or some kind of mental transplant. I watch his body language. You know, he reasons to himself and to the cameras why he's so bad. You know what I mean? But you've been in this thing for nearly 15 years, Dan. Get on with it, mate. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm disappointed in him, but impressed with Yuki, but not impressed enough to say, oh, he's ready for Red Bull. No ways.
Yeah, exactly. Red Bull, the only thing they have now, which is positive about their junior program, is Liam Lawson. I think that's it. They don't have anyone else. And
I think they've got a couple of guys in Formula 2 and Formula 3 that we should look at. I'll speak to Nasser and ask him to point out some of the Red Bull boys that he thinks have potentials. Talking about shit shows, let's talk about the biggest shit show we saw in Formula 1 for a very long time. You take it first.
Yeah, Williams. Williams and no spare chassis. Wow. Well, the explanation is simple as that. You know, they have a bottleneck in their production. They can either produce upgrades or produce a spare chassis. And then James Vowles goes and decides to produce upgrades, not a spare chassis. And that was wrong. Plain and simple. Okay. He took a risk and it backfired massively. In this day and age, you know, of Formula One, pinnacle of motorsport, you know, the best technology out there, when you have a team, there is money. No one's saying there's not. But, mate, the problem with Williams, they're so far behind with their processes and their technology and their facilities that they're still operating, which you can call a dark ages compared to today's F1 teams. Until last year, they did their parts list on an Excel sheet. They have problems with
No, I have to interrupt you here because this is annoying me. No, I have to interrupt you. This is annoying me, Jack. You know, how do you know that shit? How do you know that it was an Excel sheet? Because James Vowles sits there all day long telling everyone what he's finding Williams. He's been there for a year, for God's sake. And he's still opening drawers and finding old apples from 1950. Honestly, James Vowles must shut up. This is the most, since he's been appointed Williams team principal, by far, the most sound bites, the most quotes is James Vowles. James Vowles hasn't stopped talking. It's almost like he's doing Big Brother as he takes over Williams. Didn't he do his due diligence? Didn't he do a year before he became team principal when they came to hire him? Didn't he say, can I look at your operation? And say, oh, Excel sheet, that's not very good. Oh, this is not very good. Oh, that's not very good. Now, a year down the line, he's telling everyone what he discovered over the past year instead of making the car go fast. But you know what? I don't care if the car doesn't go fast. I think if the car's even 2 seconds off the pace, I don't care. But make sure there's two cars. It's a slap in the face of Formula One. This is the pinnacle of the sport. Putting up one car because you don't have a spare, because you took the time you had and you employed it on performance. My God. Performance for a team that never performs. You surely get your two cars going first. And think about this. This is James Vowles. This is what he was faced with. Hey, guys. Do we get performance and instead of qualifying 20th, we qualify 18? Or do we get a spare tub, a spare thing? Because you know what? Our drivers never crash. Ha ha, joke. You know, we got Sergeant in the team. Something's going to break, boys. Let's do a spare tub. Honestly, I'm absolutely dismayed by this guy. Fireable offense as far as I'm concerned. And my only message to James Vowles is shut up and make your car go fast. And best of all, make sure you've got two cars on the grid, because you are making a mockery of Formula One, which is supposed to be the pinnacle of our sport. Over to you.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Look, the part that he's talking too much, I'm with you on that. The part of developing and changing. Look, I told you about my experience in manufacturing, and I was running a much less complicated manufacturing facility, and it took me around 6 months to turn it around, to start turning it around. So that takes, you have to multiply that number by two or three when you're talking about an F1 team. But yeah, he's focusing too much on listening to his own voice. He's in love with his own voice over a mic, and he's not focusing that much on running the team. He should just work silently, get things sorted. And honestly, all these things that he's saying about, you know, Excel sheets, processor, it's just a way for telling his bosses that, hey, don't fire me just yet. Okay, there's a lot
exactly,
of
exactly. Open plan. But you know, honestly, mate, you hit the nail on the head there. Let me expand on it for you. He's doing an open source, open plan, whatever you want to call it, excuse for his bosses not to fire him in public. Simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? That's it.
It's an old ploy. Yeah, but carry on.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing more to say. They just need to shut up, like you said, and just focus on doing the work. Simple.
Exactly. And again, if you're mentioning shit shows, we can't not go away. Stubborn, mate. I put my eyes down when I saw that happening. I thought, no, I can't. I'll have to ask Jad what happened. So, Jad, what happened?
Honestly, mate, they had some problem with changing the tire, and then the nut, it fell out of the gun, and it just went through the pit lane. So if any other driver was driving through, he would have hit that nut. And yeah, they got a penalty and they got a fine and yeah, what have you. Audi have a lot of work to do. They have a lot of work.
Sorry, I want to ask you this question because I'm not sure. Is Andreas Seidel running the show at the moment? What's going on there? Who's running that team?
I don't know, mate, if Andreas Seidel is running the show or he's just focusing on the higher level of, you know, bringing Audi in, integrating Audi, getting the new management, getting the new systems. I don't know how much he's involved in the day-to-day running of the team, but yeah, you see that team's not improving, because you would have expected that when they announced Audi was coming in, that you should have seen some improvement, some change. Okay, don't get a fast car, get your operations sorted. But operationally, they're not working well. And that's something worrying. That means Audi will have to start from scratch in 2026. And no one knows.
I think they're going to have a problem. I'm going to tell you, I don't think they're going to have a problem with that. I think Audi, I'll tell you why, because they're a big operation. You know, they can dig into guys with a lot of experience in World Endurance Championship, because they've shut that thing down. So they've got a lot of professional guys there that are coming through. But the question I'll ask is Seidel running Sauber now? Because if he is.
Yeah. Well, I don't think so. I think he's busy, like I said, with higher level stuff. I think so. This is my impression.
Okay. Well, we'll have to find that's actually something that we'll probably investigate in the next couple of weeks. Just get some questions. You know, Agnes, she might be someone we can talk to. So listen, who's running the cyber show? Because it does their drivers no favor. And it's a shame because I think Zoo's having a reasonably good season. But yeah, anyway, yeah, that sums those two guys up. Is anything else worth mentioning about the weekend? Look, one thing that is worth mentioning, they've got the biggest crowd than they ever got, 450,000 plus. Went through the turnstiles over the 3 days. So, you know, it just shows you Formula One is really, really booming. And it was really nice to see people in the stands, you know. I mean, as much as Jeddah and Bahrain are great and that, you do get a feeling that there's not a lot of people there. Whereas when you watch this race, and even when you see the pictures, you know, you just see it's heaving, you know. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it was an entertaining weekend. Even look, the practice sessions were entertaining because the drivers had so many problems, you know, trying to get to grips with the circuit. There were so many offs, so many incidents. So even practice sessions were somehow entertaining, especially when you have to wake up like me, like 2, 3 a.m. in the morning to follow the practice session. So that kept me awake. I didn't sleep. So that's fine.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, these flyaways are quite brutal for us, especially living in Europe and 5, 6 time zones away. But as you said, there was not a chance that I was – immediately I switched on, every session was pretty riveting. So, look, Formula One's in a good place that way. You know, it just shows you that when Red Bull falter, you know, it can be exciting. And the reality is that circuits like this, Monaco, perhaps Baku to a certain extent, it could and Singapore for sure, could test the car. I think this is a fantastic car on the very fast stuff, but it's not as fantastic on the slow stuff. But that's still not – forget, you know, Max did get pole when it mentioned. So this could be the blip. You know, it's a run of races has to end at some point. You know, when soccer teams will have a run of 20 games and winning, or Formula One drivers or whatever, tennis players, there comes a time when it has to stop. But I still think, although I would say that Max would have had his hands full beating Carlos on Sunday. I really do believe that. I still think they'll have the edge when it comes to Suzuka, which is super, super fast.
Yeah, agree. And in closing, let's say that what Melbourne gave us is a glimmer of hope that, yeah, it's not going to be boring. No, it's going to be fun. Even if Red Bull have the upper hand, Ferrari are going to take the fight to them. Hopefully they do that. So let's be hopeful.
Yeah, I think you summed it up. And I think that's the end of our show. Thank you for watching. If you watched this far, if you didn't, you're lost. Take it easy and have a great week. And yeah, we'll see when these videos pop up. We do it on a one-up basis. Thanks all. And Jad, once again, man, thanks for a great weekend, for the coverage you provided with Intense. And yeah, bring on the next one.